Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it is my pleasure to welcome you here this morning to the all but one next to the last TMR of the season. I just want to keep reminding people of that. There are two more programs left after this one. We end on May 2nd. Next week, we will be talking about early childhood education, which, as a matter of fact, is the topic of the upcoming Onondaga Citizens League study, as hopefully many of you well know, and you'll be getting involved in that. Last week, we sort of wrapped up and released the findings of OCL's last study on refugee resettlement. That report will be coming out soon, and we are not skipping a beat. We're starting the next study right away. And I encourage all of you to, if you're interested in that topic at all, to get involved with us. It's a way to stay engaged during the summer, should you not have anything to do, maybe on Thursday mornings, who knows? So that will be next week. The following week, we'll be talking about the state of the county's health, and that will be the final program. It will also be the week that we award the annual TMR Community Service Award. And if you do have someone that you would like to nominate, need not be a TMR member, but nomination by a TMR member. There are forms on the website or out at the table, and the idea here is to recognize someone who hasn't been recognized widely, publicly, for his or her community service that is above and beyond separate or not to their professional work. So that's another thing to keep in mind. But this morning, it is my pleasure to welcome our speakers on downtown developments. Marika Trier is the executive director of the Downtown Committee of Syracuse. Marika, a TMR member, has been with the Downtown Committee since 2004. So she's in charge of all the development, retail recruitment, environmental maintenance, security, all of those programs with the Downtown Committee, and does a great job. She's a graduate of SUNY Geneseo and Binghamton University. Dave Nutting is the president and CEO of VIP Structures. VIP Structures is an architectural and construction and design company in Syracuse since 1975. Dave Nutting is also very involved in the community board and boards of the Everson Museums, been involved in the symphony, and many others. So we are very pleased to have them both with us here today. And Marika, I think, is going to start, and I'm going to hand the microphone over to her and lower the lights so she has some pictures, and then we'll take questions.
Wonderful. Thank you. Bear with me for a second while I try to juggle all of these items in my hand. Well, I can actually, I think I can stand right here, hopefully not blocking anyone's view. Well, good morning. Thank you for having me. I was excited that Sandra offered us the opportunity to come here today to present about all the things that we're seeing in downtown Syracuse. Right now, Center City Syracuse is undergoing $1.4 billion of investment activity. This is happening between Prospect Hill, the lakefront, downtown, and University Hill. In downtown Syracuse alone, we're seeing $265 million of investment. In downtown, residential development is really driving the demand for projects. Wanted to share a couple of statistics with you. I mentioned downtown housing. Right now, we are at 99% occupancy. So as fast as developers are able to build the apartments, they have waiting lists for them. Our average monthly rent is just over $1,200, and what we've seen over the past couple of years, right now the average rent per square foot in downtown for residential units is about $1.20 to $1.25. 6-7 years ago, this was more around $1.10 per square foot, so we're seeing the amount that developers are actually able to command for rent increasing over the years, which is fantastic as they're better able then to support the actual cost of these development projects. We've got 2,700 residents in downtown, and our district is one of the fastest growing census tracts within the last census. Right now, we've got 400 units planned or underway. This will bring approximately 700 new residents downtown. And 40% of our population is tied to University Hill. So all the development activity that you're seeing up on University Hill between the medical institutions and the educational institutions really have a close correlation to the development and the interest that we're seeing in downtown's redevelopment. We've been seeing significant investment in downtown's core. This past fall, New York State announced a $2.5 million grant to support the redevelopment of the former Sibley's building. This building's located at Jefferson and Salina Streets. For those of you that are not familiar with it, I don't think our picture does the pink facade justice, but it's located right on the edge of Armory Square. So 250,000 square feet of vacant space. Plans are to convert this into about 66 apartments, 62,000 square feet of commercial space, and because it is such an entryway into Armory Square, a welcome conversion for that project. Plans for this project are to be underway with construction later this year, hopefully fall of 2013. Just one block north of the Sibley's building, we've got the Pike Block redevelopment, a $25 million project underway. Since Dave Nutting is here, I'm going to hold the details and let him share those with you a little bit later in our presentation. One block east of the Pike Block, we've got the Merchants Commons project, and Joe Hucko is well underway with this development. The residential units, and there's 66 residential units in this project, are slated for a June 2013 opening, and Syracuse Media Group has announced their move into floors 1 and 2 of this property. SUNY Upstate Medical University has been spanning that Interstate 81 divide and purchased 2 high-rise towers on downtown's east side. Geneva Tower opened last August, and that was phase 1 of Upstate's Campus West project. A later phase will involve the conversion of Harrison House, and combined those 2 buildings will offer 400 apartments for hospital staff, faculty, and medical residents. Back in the center of downtown, we had the $14 million Days Plaza project open. This project opened last year and added 45 apartments to downtown's housing stock. The 45 apartments that were added were formerly vacant office space. And the $2.5 million 319 at South Salina Street projects, right in the middle of the 300 block of South Salina Street, opened last year as well with 12 apartment units on the upper floors. In Armory Square, plans are still underway for the redevelopment of the former Herbson building into the residences at Walton. This is a $5 million project that would add 14 luxury units and ground floor commercial space to one of Armory Square's last remaining vacant parcels. And you recently read in the paper about some higher profile buildings that we have in downtown Syracuse, the MISPA Towers and the former 9X building. Both of these projects, both of these buildings, assuming the current owners do not pay their delinquent taxes, the city has the ability to seize them and put them in the hands of private developers for conversion into both mixed uses. We've also been seeing significant development in the culture and tourism fields. In the heart of downtown Syracuse, the Landmark Theater recently completed its $16 million renovation and its stage house expansion. This now allows it to attract Broadway performances like Jersey and Wicked Boys because the stage house is now better able to hold the equipment sets. Of the 59% of the tickets sold for Jersey Boys September engagement came from people outside of Onondaga County, and a third of those tickets were purchased by people coming from Canada. So that means more people staying in our hotels, shopping, and dining in our downtown district and driving millions of new revenue for our community. In Armory Square, on one of the last remaining development sites, the Inns at Armory Square is rapidly materializing. This is a $29 million project that is slated for a late June opening of this year and will soon have 180 new hotel rooms to add to our downtown hotel inventory. And the Hotel Syracuse is still a property of interest as the Pyramid Hotel Group. They are a firm with significant management and development experience. They've been working on this project for several months, and their plan is to convert this into the convention center of the hotel that would add 260 to 280 hotel rooms to our downtown district. We are extremely excited about the possibility of this project and of the firms that we've worked with in the past for the hotel. This firm shows tremendous capability and experience if you were able to take a look at their portfolio when the article ran last year. But we're optimistic about what this could do to transform the southern end of our downtown district. Plans were also recently announced for the conversion of the Wells and Coverly building on the 300 block of South Salina Street into an events venue. The events company, which is a downtown business, plans to convert the upper two floors of this property into upscale event space and also plans to utilize an Armory Square entrance for the project. The rear of this project actually backs up into Armory Square, the Walton Street district. And plans would be to add a new entryway to go along with their upscale model. And downtown Syracuse continues to see a trend of suburban, new, and existing businesses moving into the downtown district. Back in 2010, the $25 million construction of Washington Station was an important sign of market maturation for us. This was one of the first new construction projects that happened after the slump of 2008. Washington Station also brought with it O'Brien and Gear Architects, who has been the poster child for companies that have moved from the suburban locations and moved into our downtown district. O'Brien and Gear brought with them initially 330 employees. They saw the value the downtown location would have on attracting young talent to their firm, knowing that they needed to start training and cultivating that next generation of leaders for their company. And more companies are realizing the importance of the downtown location. We've been pleased to welcome several new companies over the last 18 months. Onondaga Tower, which is the former HSBC building on South Warren Street, is undergoing an $8 million conversion. This will transform this building into Class A office space. Aspen Athletic Club opened on the ground floor. St. Joe's Hospital recently moved in, bringing more than 90 employees into our downtown district. And early next month, Joel LeMay Fresh Garden Cafe will be opening on the ground floor where the old HSBC Bank used to be. At the Tech Garden, this is a 35,000 square foot business incubator, and it is at capacity with a waiting list. So inside, we've got more than 35 companies growing, collaborating, and working on the businesses of the future. And Synapse Partners was recently awarded LEED Platinum certification for their headquarters building on East Water Street. This building received the seventh highest LEED score in the world. We've also seen longtime businesses recommitting to downtown Syracuse, such as Bond, Shonick & King, who re-signed their lease at One Lincoln Center. Other companies who have been expanding downtown include KSNR, who brought with them 185 employees to be closer to their AXA Towers headquarters, as well as Metro Fitness, who recently expanded at Salina Place to take advantage of the growing demand for their physical fitness services. And I mentioned the Syracuse Media Group, which is the former Post Standard. They have remained committed to downtown and announced their move into the Merchants Commons project, which is slated for next month. We've also seen significant retail development in our downtown district. In the last 12 months alone, and this is just a graph, I know the numbers are hard to read, but it starts with 2007 there at the end and goes through 2012. In the last 12 months alone, we've seen 13 new retail establishments open in downtown Syracuse. So we're looking at this as we're starting to now have the demand for the types of retail and services that we'd like to see. That's one of the reasons that we always promote the development of housing in our downtown district. More businesses will soon join them. I had mentioned Joel LeMay Fresh Garden Cafe, slated for an opening early next month, as well as Gannon's Ice Cream, which I know many of you would be excited about, as are we. So we're working with them to open their business within the next few weeks. And the streetscape in downtown Syracuse is rapidly changing with green improvements and numerous transportation projects. Downtown is now developing into a more sustainable and easily accessible location. There's over $128 million in infrastructure developments underway in the downtown district right now. Centra opened its $14 million transit hub at the southern end of downtown Syracuse. This now offers passengers the opportunity to wait in climate-controlled facilities. This project also removed a significant traffic congestion off of the Fayette-Salina Street intersection, which is downtown's 100% corner. Onondaga County Save the Rain program. They've been making significant investments in downtown Syracuse. To date, they've invested over $80 million in green improvements in the downtown streetscape. Of this project, this is a photo shown on East Water Street. Some of the more notable projects that are currently underway include the Clinton Storage Facility that's being built in the trolley lot in Armory Square, as well as Haggard Park, which is nearing completion, which is just northwest of Clinton Square, near the Genesee and Clinton Street intersections. The city, county, and National Grid are funding the renovations of Bank Street, which is located between Warren and Salina Streets in downtown. This was a former service alley. It is now slated for a $1.1 million renovation to convert it into more of a pedestrian-friendly location. Plans are to add green infrastructure, traffic calming measures, lighting, and plantings to make people actually want to go down this alley. The significance of this is right now this is the back of some of the buildings that we see on the 300 block of South Salina Street. Most of those properties have retail located on the ground floor of those businesses. We've been working to promote the development of housing on those upper floors, so many of those buildings will need to have access to the rear of their buildings for the pedestrian entrances, since Salina Street serves as the retail entrance. So this, we hope, will help to convert this into more of a pedestrian-friendly area, while let the people feel more comfortable walking down almost 24 hours a day. The $11 million Creek Walk project opened downtown, and this provided a much needed connection to the Inner Harbor and Franklin Square. It's been an enormously popular amenity for downtown residents, employees, and visitors. And the activity that we're seeing happening on University Hill is beginning to spill over into the downtown district. This has been forcing the community to re-examine the future of Interstate 81. That and the viaduct, we know, is nearing the end of its useful life. Right now, Interstate 81, as I'm sure many of you know, cuts off the hill from downtown Syracuse. And as it's nearing the end of its useful life, it will either need to be repaired or replaced. There's been a growing consensus that Interstate 81 should be removed and replaced by an at-grade boulevard, which will then better help connect the University Hill and downtown districts. And to make downtown more friendly for bike enthusiasts, the city of Syracuse has 7.6 miles of bike lane infrastructure planned for the downtown district. Syracuse University's Connective Corridor project has invested $50 million in infrastructure improvements to our center city. Massive streetscape enhancements have been completed on both University Ave and Genesee Streets. Later this summer, work is going to be starting in downtown Syracuse on the Civic Strip, which is Montgomery Street, adding street improvements and helping to highlight some of our most important cultural institutions. And they've also utilized $625,000 in facade improvement grants for projects that will add signage, awnings, public art, bike rack, and other amenities and improvements to buildings that will help to better identify the actual path of the connective corridor itself. An additional $250,000 was announced just last week in grant funds. These will be funds available for facade improvements, but they've also set aside a significant portion of that funding for lighting of iconic buildings within the downtown Syracuse area. So what I have provided in just this brief amount of time is a highlight of the $265 million of investment that we're seeing in downtown Syracuse. Real projects, new amenities, and people calling downtown Syracuse home. But, and there's always a but, no matter how successful these areas are, people are always going to be judging downtown by the health of our Main Street, by the health of Salina Street, and more specifically, the 300 block of Salina Street. Dave Nutting and his team at VIP Structures are busy transforming four vacant buildings at the corner of Faya and Salina Streets into an acre of development. On a block that sits 76% vacant currently, we are anxiously awaiting the addition of the Pike Block project. And here to talk to us a little bit more about the project is Dave Nutting.
Thank you, Mirica. If you haven't been downtown for 6 months, you owe it to yourself to go downtown. It is an entirely different downtown than we all think it was just a few months ago even. Things are changing so fast, it's astonishing. $1.4 billion of downtown investment, and this is Syracuse. We're even getting, just before the case was off the paper, we were starting to get massively positive written downtown articles from Dick Case. So the world is changing, and it's a fascinating place. The Pike Block. We have been fortunate enough to be working on this project now for about 4 years. Before us, there was another developer who tried to make it happen for a couple of years, and the buildings were essentially vacant for 15 to 20 years prior to that. They are critical to downtown because they're right on essentially Main and Main, Salina Street and Fayette Street. With the change of the bus transfer facility down to the end, it both cleaned up that street so we don't have people hanging around on the corners, but it also, frankly, made taking buses downtown a dramatically different experience. In the middle of winter, you are covered, you are warm, you have room to catch a bus. So life has changed entirely downtown, partly with that one change. I thought I'd show you a little bit of what we took on. Many of you know this. This is the most recent look of the building before we started to cover everything with plywood on the front. That plywood will be coming off by the beginning of June, and all new facades will be on the building. We've already started from working our way down Fayette Street. Haven't removed anything yet. So this is what everybody was used to. Transfer facility all in the corner, lots of things happening. Not the greatest place to be. These are what our buildings look like. This is the back of the Chamberlain building. There's a courtyard in back that was always full of old mattresses and all kinds of junk. Who knew what was there? This is another view of that courtyard. You used to be able to see into this from Clinton Street. This is the side of the Butler building right adjacent to that courtyard. Again, this is what we inherited when we started to do the project. The Wilson building had been leaking for so many years that essentially we had to gut the entire building and work to save much of the structure in it. The Bond building and other of our buildings needed over 50% of the floors and roof all rebuilt from scratch. So although they look like the same buildings before, they're largely entirely new on the outside. By the time we came on, the 40 Below group had taken 40 dumpsters of trash out of these buildings over a whole host of weekends where they'd gotten together as volunteers and done that work. After we took it over, about 200 more dumpsters of trash were taken out, plus asbestos removal, mold removal, and everything else you can imagine. There are a few historic pieces that are worth saving. The Wilson building in particular has a historic corridor with the tile on the floor, with the way the stairwells work. That will all be restored back to its original. Other areas where it had all been stripped out will be a contemporary juxtaposition against the historic tin ceilings and all that we'll be maintaining. We are getting significant historic tax credits from both the federal and state governments to help assist in putting the project together. We started the project by actually tearing down the back third of one of the buildings, the Bond building. Used to extend all the way back through the courtyard, and we got approval from the historic folks to tear down the back third and create an interior courtyard within the project that we're doing. This is the location of the project, as you can see, located right on the corner, the Chamberlain, Witherell, Wilson, and Bond buildings. One of the most important things we wanted to do was to, from an urban planning point of view, connect the Armory Square Historic District to the newly formed Salina Street Downtown Historic District. Many of you may remember there used to be about a 7-foot wide, terribly dark and dingy passage that you could, if you braved it, you could walk through an alley and then hold your breath and walk through a narrow passage and get all the way through to Salina Street. It was closed a number of years ago. That's been entirely removed. When we're done, we will have created a 20-foot wide, 30-foot high, with full glass on both ends, fully lit up passage that now does connect the two sides here. So although we're building apartments and building a community, the most important thing I think we're doing is really connecting these two districts right through our building from Armory Square to South Salina Street. These are our buildings in color. This is the back of the Bond building, which has now been taken down. Once this building was taken down, we now have a courtyard system that goes all the way from Fayette Street all the way down to the theater to the south, and a courtyard system that starts out here off of Clinton Street, goes all the way through, and straight through to Salina Street. So what ended up happening is we created new frontage. This red line here all the way around is actually retail frontage that never existed before. The way the elevations work here, virtually all the buildings on Salina Street are one story above their backs on this back alley. So although they all have retail on Salina Street, they'll now be able to have lower retail on this back pedestrian core. So if you know what's been happening on the backside of Possibilities, there's a nice little courtyard there, which people use and works out well. This will be a dramatically enhanced, much larger courtyard full of businesses, probably starting out with bars and restaurants. We'd like to have businesses that are open till 2 in the morning so that people are comfortable walking through. But this entire new district has been formed by tying all of these alleyways all the way together. I should be pointing this in some, there we go. When we're done, we'll have all new facades. They're largely historically accurate facades. They're done with modern materials, but National Parks wanted us to take these back more toward what they might have looked like in the late 1800s. We are creating a roof garden. One of the things we're doing within our building is creating a full community. So we have not only apartments, but we have a number of meeting rooms. We have outside gathering spaces. This is actually a roof garden that's four floors up. If you're up in this courtyard itself, which will be fully planted, you can see right across the way will be Lincoln Tower. This is to be able to be used by all of the tenants of the building. Within the glass bridge that you see there, there'll be sofas and chairs. You can come back after work, take your iPad up here and read your email and look down on the one side on our courtyards, on the other side, look out to the gardens outside. This is that newly created courtyard where we knocked down the back third of the building. There's a narrow slot between this courtyard and the one directly to the north. This one is our commercial courtyard. This will be surrounded by businesses. The other one is our residential courtyard. It'll actually be locked off. There'll be gates. You'll be able to swipe your way through the gate. But once you're through that gate, you'll actually be in our complex. We consider that our front door of the complex. If you're going to be coming and going as a tenant, you're probably going to be coming and going from the Clinton Street side. The parking garage is right there. Plus, from a safety point of view, you can walk on a public street, swipe your way through the gate, and you're immediately into the project itself. This is that courtyard looking towards Salina Street. Because this is internal, we're able to do contemporary juxtaposition against the historic fabric that was there prior. The right side, this 20-foot wide area, two-story area, you can see in the back a little bit of light. That's Salina Street at the far end. So you'll walk in here, up some stairs, and straight through to Salina Street at the back side of this. Same thing coming from the other way. It's all glass on this side. We'll light it up about 20-foot candles greater than the surrounding area. So at 10 at night, there'll be light coming out of this area. It'll be an inviting area. The tenant we're putting into this two-story space is a bar restaurant that'll be open till 2 at night. They have all glass looking into the passageway. So there'll be people there. There'll be a lot of things happening. It's really important that we have that life going on here. Our apartments themselves, and we've now actually completed the first bunch of apartments. The Chamberlain Building and the upper two floors of the Witherell Building are going to be occupied on June 1st. We're two-thirds of the way through selling out those apartments. They're going very fast. These are some renderings of how they look. We've tried to make them very efficient. We think the finish level is a little higher than anything else in the area at this point in time, and they're being received very well. We were able to refinish the existing floors, use the existing beams, juxtapose as much of the historic fabric as possible as we were building the buildings, and yet we were able to put in within the ceilings, for instance, we have a little rubber sound isolation clip that we put in, which allowed us to really separate the sound from the tenants space to space. One of the reasons people leave apartments after a year or two is they can't stand hearing people all around them all day long. Again, just a few more pictures of the way the apartments work. We've got a website up. You're welcome to look at it, pikeblock.com, and it's actually kind of an interesting downtown sort of a feel of a website. And that's it. I'm happy to answer, you know, both of us are happy to answer any questions you have. So.
I know that the Mirica, is it going to be the sixth annual or seventh?
Seventh annual.
Seventh annual Downtown Living Tour is coming up, actually 1 month from today, May 18th, Saturday.
The seventh annual Downtown Living Tour is coming up on Saturday, May 18th. We're excited to be headquartering our event this year at the Pike Block Project. So we'll be able to have everyone go there as their first stop, but also check out in person a number of the units that Dave has just talked about today.
If you have never been to that, it is an absolutely eye-opening experience. One of the things that always surprises me is 70-80% of the people that are walking through then are my age or older. So they're 50 to 70 and 80 year old people, many of whom are trying it on and saying, can I really get away without this yard? Is parking close enough? I'm in Florida half the year, maybe it makes sense. We're actually seeing a number of our tenants, a whole different demographic than what we all think. So you would go to this event thinking it's gonna be a bunch of 20 and 30 somethings. It's an absolutely eye-opening experience. Plus you'll see firsthand really what's happening downtown. So if you can make it, I absolutely recommend it. It's wonderful.
I second that.
The presentation was the most optimistic view of city of Syracuse I've heard in a very long time, so that was terrific. You cited some good statistics about Landmark Theater, you know, folks coming from Canada and so on. With the O'Brien and Gear building coming downtown, is there any tangible statistics about more revenue going into the Armory Square businesses, restaurants, and anything? I mean, have you pointed?
Yeah. More qualitative data in terms of stories. And, you know, we're based right in the downtown district, so our job is to be aware of everything that's happening, you know, kind of on that ground level with the business owners and the property owners. So one of our affiliate companies is the Convention and Visitors Bureau, who has done a tremendous amount of work in terms of quantifying the visitor spending data that we're seeing towards some of our attractions, but also the cultural institutions themselves. We are in the process right now of trying to get more quantitative data for downtown and what the impacts of these developments are in the downtown Syracuse area. So hopefully in the near future we'll have some solid statistics, but definitely, you know, from talking to our business owners, when O'Brien and Gear moved downtown, they saw an influx of the employees coming in to do their shopping, you know, mostly a lot of the lunch crowd as well. And we're seeing it as well with some of the new businesses that are opening, like Joel LeMay and Gannon's, just with people doing work in the spaces. They're getting great feedback from our downtown population about, you know, we're glad you're here, great to have the sandwich shop right in the corner. So we've been getting that type of feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just wanted to point out that Marika brought copies of the downtown or retail recruitment.
Yeah, I brought, to make your lives easier, I brought several copies of the presentation that I had made on downtown Syracuse development, but in that document also includes all of the rest of that $1.4 billion that I was not able to talk about. So projects on University Hill, Prospect Hill, Lakefront, so that's a really good overview on that. It's also available on our website. And then the other document I brought is something called Think Downtown Syracuse. Last year we had released a piece called Be Downtown Syracuse, which is a piece that we use to go after retail tenants for the downtown district. We just 2 weeks ago were able to release our downtown office recruitment piece. And that piece gets people to think about downtown a little bit differently, thinking about the quality of life amenities, thinking about how you're so close to people, you have those opportunities to have those impromptu meetings on the street, where most of you know that's where a lot of the business gets conducted. So that document features a number of our business leaders in downtown, a bunch of statistics. So hopefully in an easily readable format.
Marika, you're probably more aware of it than I am, but downtown flunks good signage. And is the downtown committee involved in any programs to get better signage for visitors, residents, business owners, but where we are and where we should go?
We are, and that is, wayfinding is one of my pet peeves as well. I'm from Rochester originally, not far away, but not from the Syracuse area originally. But when I got here, if you don't know the area, it's pretty difficult to find your way around, with especially driving with the one-way street. So walking through downtown is very easy. But if you are a visitor, your lasting impression is your experience that you had in the downtown Syracuse area. So we are excited that in June, The Syracuse Metropolitan Transportation Council will be launching phase two of their wayfinding study. And at the end of it, the goal is to have an implementable wayfinding program. They just wrapped up phase one of the wayfinding study, which is essentially getting people from the highways to major destinations in our city. Phase two is getting people from destination to destination. Phase three would actually be a pedestrian walking system. So phase two, my goal is to have an implementable system at the end of it, complete with what destinations we're highlighting, where those signs will go, what old signs we can get rid of that maybe no longer make sense, and have a new wayfinding system put up in place, and working closely with our partners at the City of Syracuse and the Convention and Visitors Bureau on that program. And then phase three, I mentioned, would be more of a pedestrian scale system, which is different than a vehicular system. A pedestrian scale system is being installed later this summer through the Civic Strip activities, but that'll be focused on a very targeted area, Montgomery Street specifically. But the goal would be to be able to expand that system to cover, for us, our focus is the rest of downtown, but hopefully later on through the rest of the city as well.
America, how do you think the changes planned for the Central Library downtown will contribute to the quality of life downtown?
Well, fantastic question, Elizabeth. as you know, we were extremely excited that the Central Library is keeping its downtown location. We just think it's such an amenity for visitors, such an amenity for our population. We don't have a downtown bookstore, so thinking of the library as our downtown bookstore, could there be a cafe built in? But we do have a downtown bookstore over at the Onondaga Historical Association. Thank you, Greg. I knew I would get caught. Anybody else? But, I mean, the change to the library, I think adding to the revitalization of South Salina Street, there will be a new entranceway, much more well-marked, that is planned. So I think just a huge boost and a huge, for the library, show of support for the revitalization that we're seeing in the downtown district. So thank you.
I second the kudos of this other gentleman about the amount of work that's being done downtown, and I think it's great. But there seems to still be a gap of development going on. I just came back from the Final Four, for example, in Atlanta. We're not Atlanta, I understand. It illustrates the potential, the tremendous potential of convention business. 100,000 people there and $72 million generated. We're far from that, I understand that. But it shows the potential of convention business. Where does this really rank in terms of your priorities to develop something that's going to work with our convention center?
Well, downtown revitalization is our main priority. I mentioned the Convention and Visitors Bureau is one of our affiliate companies. The downtown committee is also affiliated with Center State CEO. The Hotel Syracuse, one of the barriers to attracting additional conventions into our area is the lack of current hotel rooms and then accessibility to our convention center. There is a new general manager at the On Center complex. We've been working with them, obviously, very closely. We want to see more conventions, more tourism dollars coming into our downtown district just because of the revenue that it generates for our businesses and for our community. So we think the first step is really the revitalization of the Hotel Syracuse as the Convention Center Hotel. This is in close enough proximity to our convention center, and as we're able to add more rooms to our inventory for the conventioneers coming into town, then we're able to start to attract larger conventions, and then a master plan along the way is to add more convention space to be able to then host larger events within the district, and then possibly additional hotel development. You know, if this is like a 10 or 15 year plan, that's where we see it going. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
I'm happy to clarify.
I wanted to ask about some basic things. My husband's business was one of the last businesses to leave the Hotel Syracuse, and his office is still downtown on Fayette Street. But two things are grocery shopping and parking, and they are still a very big problem. And from what I've learned in the last 10 years that I've lived here, one of the reasons that many people do not go downtown, not because of groceries, but because of parking. And to live down there, you don't want to go way out to Wegmans to shop
or have every meal out at a restaurant. And so those are two things. But I wish he were alive today because he would be so excited. He loved Syracuse, and he did do so much to bring the arts to Syracuse. So you do need groceries and parking to live down there.
Yeah, that is, groceries is one of the primary reasons that we've put so much of our organizational effort on the development of residential. Right now, I mentioned we have about 2,700 residents that actually live in the downtown district, and that's not enough of a market to support a grocer. We've been told once you get more to that 5,000, 7,500 population mark, that's when we'll start to become more attractive to those types of services like the grocer that we know that we need in downtown. We have been investigating some other opportunities, more independent-based for a grocer-type operation within the downtown district, but it's also making sure that if those businesses do come into downtown that there's actually a market there that's going to exist to support them. We hate to see businesses come into downtown open and then close, because that's not a good sign either. So we've been frantically working with the help of a lot of our great developers here like Dave to build those residential units, get residents in the apartments so we can start to build that market. With parking, I agree. There was a parking study done back in 2008. We're in the process right now of working with the city to update some of that information, and actually the county as well, to look at parking solutions for the Center City area. Part of the problem is parking facilities aren't as uniformly marked, so you don't know what parking's available for visitors, what's only available for residents or employees. So that's part of the issue. But then also in some of the faster growing areas like Armory Square, we know parking is less convenient there compared to other areas of the downtown district. So trying to create more of an active street life so people don't mind walking an additional block to where those parking facilities are. But no, we definitely hear you, and we hear it very often as well, just because of the work that we do with parking. But something that we're working with our partners to look into.
Yeah, and let me just 10 or 15 years ago, we read in the paper all the time about if we only had retail downtown, we could bring the downtown back, and how Destiny has killed downtown because all the retail headed out to Destiny and left downtown. Retail is a result of having people that are there to purchase things from retail. So retail is not a leading indicator. Leading is a trailing indicator. And the way we fix downtown is that we get, and unfortunately we have to start with folks that can afford apartments that are too expensive for normal folks. So we have a whole bunch of young professionals that can afford to pay $1,200 for a one-bedroom apartment or more. But when we add 600 a year, it isn't very many years before we're at that 5,000 where a grocery store follows. Now, we may get there earlier. Bob Doucette's had all kinds of conversations with every grocer known to man and is getting closer to getting grocers to go downtown. But once that happens, we'll have the grocery store piece fixed. There are, obviously, there's No James, which actually isn't too far away from downtown, but it's not a place you would walk yet. There's a lot happening on the near west side also for a new Save Right, which again is actually very close, right out on Onondaga Street. But we need to have a different perception of where it's safe to walk downtown. And the way you get there is that people live there, people own it, they take ownership of it. And then eventually we go from kind of an elite, wealthy bunch of folks who can afford to live downtown, which unfortunately have to be the trendsetters, to being able to make it an average place where average people and eventually low-income people can all afford to live in the same place. But I think it starts with the way things are happening now. It starts with the early groundbreakers. You know, we're renting apartments to people who are happy to walk in, and still some of what you saw on those early slides is still in a few of the buildings. They look at that and they say, okay, we believe it. They're drinking the Kool-Aid way before they ever should. But eventually it needs to be mainstream. And I think we get there piece by piece. We get there if you folks can go to the Downtown Living Tour and go home and say, it's not perfect yet, but boy, you know, in a couple of years I could see this happening. So I think you get there that way. Studies have shown there actually is a lot of parking downtown. It's just not where people would really like it to be. And again, if you're happy to walk two blocks, before you didn't want to walk a block on Salina Street. If you're happy walking four or five blocks because it feels safe and looks safe, I think it changes things dramatically.
I wanted to return with some trepidation to Hotel Syracuse. One idea I had recently was that we ought to have a downtown living tour open house there around Halloween, That would be kind of fun to actually see what it looks like inside there. Another thought later, when I was kind of despairing, is we should turn it into a nice Save the Rain parking lot. That really is kind of depressing. But, I mean, it is just such a blot on the landscape right now, and it's not getting any younger. Now, the question is, hope springs eternal, and you've mentioned the new developer that's interested in the hotel, and you mentioned 200 and some rooms?
About 260 to 280.
And I know that there's something like 500 some rooms there now, so does that mean, what flows from that is another question, is the idea to double the size of the rooms, or in view of the demographics downtown and the demand for residents, you'd think that A, that it would be worth putting residences in there, and B, is there enough demand for hotel rooms?
It is one of the other items that we've heard people do express concerns with the hotel. People remember the hotel on its decline. They remember what was happening there, so it's hard. I mean, it's such an iconic landmark for downtown Syracuse, so we are certainly hopeful it will not turn into a Save the Rain parking lot. We're hopeful that it will remain. It's just one of those key landmarks that people in the community have this intrinsic tie to. It did have close to 500 hotel rooms when it was operating, but one of the complaints always about the hotel rooms were that they were cramped and dark and not functioning. So, no, the property would be larger hotel rooms, so rooms would be combined to offer larger, more marketable hotel rooms for the population. There's been conversations about possible later phases, including that Hilton Tower, the newer part, maybe as extended stay, maybe as residential units. So showing that it's only 260 to 280 rooms versus the 500 hotel rooms it used to be, I don't think is an indicator of lack of demand. It's just our market was telling us that this is about what we need for the convention center hotel rooms. But if we're able to get that hotel up and going, we're able to bring more conventions to our Syracuse area, then we think there's a market for an increased number of hotel rooms. So possibly another hotel would be built, on that on-center parking lot.
I had a question about Common Center. If there's any news there, that's, as you say, the new parking bus garage has moved. So that leaves some public space. And are there any ongoing plans? Are there anything that we should know about now for the Common Center Perseverance Park area?
Possibly in the near future. There are a number of stakeholders that are interested in what happens with that plaza area. Just outside of One Lincoln Center, at that Fayette Salina Street intersection, Perseverance Park is currently located there at the corners of Salina and Washington Street. Common Center, the transfer hub, used to be, you had their booth right at the corners of Fayette and Salina Street. So there have been some early discussions underway about the future of that space. And as part of that, there would be community input that is sought and community involvement. Just because it is such a key location, it is the geographic heart of our downtown district. So I think there's a lot of interested parties that would like to see something else happen with that space, particularly with the Pike Block going across the way, a number of new residents there. Taking that into account, you have major office buildings that surround the area. Connective corridor comes right through. So there's, I think, a lot of opportunity for what could happen with the space.
Just a couple of questions on maybe some of the details. I walk around downtown quite a bit. I have an office down there. And I see sidewalks in terrible condition, many of them not associated with the new projects that you're talking about. And I'm wondering what's going to be done about those, if anything, because it certainly is a big part of the image that you have for downtown. And then the other thing I was going to ask at the same time is cleaning up. What do you have in the way of, are you folks responsible for just the cleaning up day to day, week to week of the downtown areas?
We do. We have, as part of the downtown committee, we provide services over and above the basic City of Syracuse level services. So that's what property owners in the district are helping to support. The City of Syracuse takes care of the trash collection, and things like that. They have two individuals that work downtown. We have three individuals that work the 82 blocks of the downtown district. I'd love to quadruple our maintenance staff because downtown is such a public space that a lot of things happen. So our guys are out there daily doing routine litter pickup, graffiti removal, helping to address streetscape furniture. During the wintertime, helping to property owners, although it's always their responsibility, helping our property owners to plow sidewalks to ensure that people can get through. Because as you mentioned, the streetscape, the walking experience is not consistent, you know, particularly the sidewalks. In the same vein, all property owners don't always clear their sidewalks, so it's difficult to navigate the district. So we do have a crew, an environmental maintenance crew, that works throughout the week to help clean up downtown. And then as far as the sidewalks, those are actually under property owner purview. So downtown is a public space, so there's a lot of different interests that are balanced.
That's the problem. You didn't get them fixed.
Who's going to do it? Ultimately, it is the property owner's responsibility.
So the city, in other words, maybe the city would have to cite the property owner or something like that. Okay, question.
10 to 15 years ago, the Onondaga Citizens League held a few meetings downtown to specifically aimed at young people that were working downtown to encourage them to live there. Specifically, we were talking about the east side of the 300 block of South Salina Street, between that and Bank Alley. You gave us a little info on it. Tell us more about what's going to happen in that particular block, because it's ripe for development.
Right. We would hope we'd see more development continuing on the block. On the east side of the block right now, you have probably close to 20 apartments on that whole east side of the block. One of the things that we did as the downtown committee back in 2006 is we submitted an historic district nomination, so we got that 300 block registered on the National Register. Our goal was to help lay the groundwork for developers and property owners to be able to take advantage of historic preservation tax credits. So again, we work so closely with these development projects and helping them to identify different financing tools and incentives that are available. A lot of times I'm going after different grant sources. So we want also to be able to sort of pre-qualify a number of these buildings to be able to use historic tax credits to help supplement their development. So a lot of the developers were watching the Pike Block because that is the largest development. It's 78 apartments, 130,000 square feet of space, the largest development on that block, watching where the Pike Block was and watching their progress. So that helps to set a sense of certainty and direction for the block. So our goal is to work, you know, there are some speculators that have property on the 300 block, so they're just waiting for developers to come along to buy them out because they see the direction that the block is going. And then there's some owners that actually have been there a long time that do want to do something with their block. So they sort of run the gamut in terms of experience level, but we're certainly interested in working with any of them to incentivize further development. But you see the Pike Block project happening, major anchor of development. You have the Landmark Theater on the other end in terms of cultural development, helping to provide activity. Then on the east side of the block, just behind it, you have the county, the city, and National Grid laying the foundation for what will be, you know, in these public improvements in Bank Street, of what will be the rear entrances for those east side buildings. So again, just all these different entities trying to work together to make the area ripe for further development.
As we talk to folks there, because they approach us because of what we're doing, I don't think there is an owner of any property on that east side that isn't saying, how do I now jump in and get this started? Especially the back of their buildings are all being redone. The front is now being redone. They're in a historic district. And I can't overstate how much the historic district helps. If you're so inclined, 25 cents of every dollar we're spending on our project is coming from national and state historic tax credits. And the state historic tax credits are absolutely brand new. They were passed, the law was passed 3 or 4 years ago, then was put on hold. Then the hold wore off. And finally they came back. It's only as of January of 2013 that we have historic tax credits to use, and they've been threatened a number of times. But once that is there as a stable piece, and they're only available for, it's kind of an upstate New York thing that New York is doing this for. But literally, if you can get a project within 75% of being finished, and you're willing to go through, it takes a little bit of work,
go through what it takes on the historic tax credits, you can get it over the finish line. So the designation of the historic district, what's going on now, Peter Mazurlin was in there early, did a great bunch of condominiums very early, arguably a year or two too early. But my guess is 5 years from now, there won't be anything available on that east side.
Following up on that question, if the tax credits continued, what would be the next big thing that you would like to tackle, Dave nodding, or what would be the next, as a developer, what would you like to see done to, you know, beyond the financing piece, to sort of prime the environment for developers? What do you think is the next important thing?
Well, I think, and it's not so much what we want to do. We've been downtown for 20 years and moved down there a lot of years ago, and frankly took on this project because I was involved at what was the MDF and became Center State, and had been trying forever to make this happen, and decided we would make a proposal that said, well, if we can't do it with what we have in front of us, because there were $7 million of grants and low-interest loans. And the first question is, well, you have $7 million of free or very close to free money. How in the world can't you make this project work? Well, let me tell you all the ways you can't make the project work. And until the historic tax credits came through, which was about another $7 million. So we're doing a 25, we started a $25 million project. Unfortunately, it'll probably be 27 or 28 when we're done. And at the end of the day, when we're all done and they're fully occupied and it's fully absolutely successful, we could sell the project fully occupied for $12 million. So the question is, how do you bridge the difference between $12 million and $25 million. Well, rents are going up, which is good news and bad news. They're going up enough that projects are becoming closer to self-supporting. My guess is in a year or two, the historic tax credits alone and a little bit of additional help will make the projects work. We don't have a pilot, for instance, on our project. We didn't need a pilot. We got a lot of help from a lot of other places. So I think things are moving along quickly. Let me make sure I answered the crux of the question. What do we want to do next? We want to get through this. We want to see if we can do it and not reinvest everything we've made over the past 37 years of business. And then we are going to do, right next to our project, the next little sliver is called the Singer Building. We control that now. We have a 99-year lease on that building. So we'll be bringing that into our project next. And we're talking to a couple of people on the east side who have asked us to do some work and looking it over, and at the end of the day would like to actually sell and have us take over the project. So my guess is we'll do more dabbling, and I don't see us doing another $28 million project in the very near future.
Thanks. A quick question.
I thought it was wonderful about the contemporary, the patios, the alley, using that. And what was wonderful is about the lighting to make it pleasant. People want to walk. Do you have any plans for the visual arts, murals, sculpture, things that make a city an individual place, a place you want to be at?
Let me adjust the pike block, perhaps. And we don't, the real plans we have as far as sculpture are, what we plan to do, and it's more of a signage, it's if you can picture a big arch over these alleyways. One of the questions is, why would I ever walk in this alleyway? And one of the answers is light. One of the answers is paving. Another answer, obviously, is having a lot of people in there. But our intent is to create a district, and I think part of that will be some signage. And so I think you'll see some sculptural signage that we're doing at both ends of this. I mean, we're going to call it the alley. We're going to just bite the bullet and call it the alley. It is an alley. But there'll be signage on both ends that I think will attract people, and I think we'll use some local artists to try and create that. Other than that, we don't have any plans at the moment for sculpture pieces within this. I don't know if downtown works on that piece as well.
We don't. No. We looked into it. I mean, there's so many different elements that go into making a vibrant downtown experience. And so with our strategic plan, we've been going through how we can help to facilitate that atmosphere downtown.
Thank you. We will see you at the Downtown Living Tour.
We have two.